morning, everyone, and welcome to ULG in Philadelphia. I'm glad to see everyone. So that when we read the Declaration, it also means that we spread broadcast the teachings. And you can pick up one of these declarations at the desk as you enter, and I think there's some outside, even on the door. Briefly, we're here to spread broadcast the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And to carry out that program, we meet twice a week. Because the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without a professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It's loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. Therefore, has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. Remember, the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. And as we said, this little wonderful pamphlet is available. And as you saw, we began at 11 a.m. this morning and will be over by 12 noon. Doors open, though, at 10:30. This being February the 9th, the topic will be the 14th Dalai Lama. Now, on Wednesdays, we open the door at 5:30, so you can come in and attend the library, all the theosophical books and literature available. And the study class on Wednesday begins from 7:30 and ends at 8:30. And now we're studying In the Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. Ocean of Theosophy. Everybody is invited. If you have any further questions, of course, always ask the usher sitting there who can explain many things to you. As is our custom, we have a little reading before we begin today. And the reading was taken from The Voice of the Silence. Begins on page 35. And what it talks about, using a language we're not accustomed to, they use the term vesture. And as we know, vesture means outer garment or so forth, a covering. These vestures are Nirmanakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Dharmakaya, robe, sublime. The Shanya robe, 'tis true, can purchase light eternal. The Shanya robe alone gives the nirvana of destruction. It stops rebirth, but oh, Lanu, it also kills compassion. No longer can the perfect Buddhas who don the Dharmakaya glory help man's salvation. These terms that we're using are from another language. That is why on Wednesday the library is always open to help you. Alas, shall selves be sacrificed to self? Mankind under the wheel of units? No, beginner, this is the open path, the way to selfish bliss, shunned by the bodhisattvas of the secret heart, the Buddhas of compassion. To live to benefit mankind is the first step. To practice the six glorious virtues is the second. To don Nirmanakaya's humble robe is to forego eternal bliss for selves, to help on man's salvation, to reach Nirvana's bliss, but to renounce it is the supreme, the final step, the highest on renunciation's path. No, O disciple, this is the secret path selected by the Buddhas of perfection, who sacrifice the self to weaker selves. Yet, if the doctrine of the heart is too high winged for thee, if thou needest help thyself and fearest to offer help to others, then, thou of timid heart, be warned in time. Remain content with the I doctrine of the law. Hope still. For if the secret path is unattainable, this day is within thy reach tomorrow. Learn that no efforts, not the smallest, whether in the right or wrong direction, can vanish from the world of causes. Even wasted smoke remains not traceless. A harsh word uttered in past lives is not destroyed, but ever comes again. The pepper plant will not give birth to roses, nor the sweet jessamine silver star to thorn or thistle turn. Thou canst create this day thy chances for thy morrow. In the great journey, cause us on each hour bear its harvest of effects. For rigid justice rules the world. With mighty sweep of never-erring action, it brings to mortals lives of weal or woe. The karmic progeny of all our former thoughts and deeds. Take then as much as merit hath in store for thee, O thou ancient, or rather patient heart. Be of good cheer, and rest content with fate. Such is thy karma, the karma of the cycle of thy birth, the destiny of those who in their pain and sorrow are born along with thee. Rejoice and weep from life to life, chained to thy previous actions.
Here we find ourselves again. Mahayana Buddhism. And the exemplification of that in an incarnation would be the Dalai Lama. Now, the Dalai Lama is he was the political ruler of Tibet. And I say was. But he was born in 1935, in July of that year. And he'll be 85 this year. He was found when he was 2 years old by the monks that wander about looking for the reincarnation of spiritual beings. And so they have a whole system of education within the Tibetan structure, or the Buddhist structure in Tibet. And he was educated in cosmology and ethics and all the sciences. In fact, this Dalai Lama, because of his introduction to the West at such an early age. I think we all heard the story of that German who wandered into Tibet and ended up being the teacher of the Dalai Lama. He became fascinated with science, and he has incorporated that into much of the understanding of the Tibetan people. But at a very early age, and not until he was, I think, 19, did he receive his full ordination or being accepted fully into the order. Now, the Dalai Lama is known as being a being of peace and compassion. He propagates the idea of ahimsa, which was propagated by anyone know? It's yes. No, well, I mean, as far as Mahatma Gandhi. Sorry to test you like that, but Mahatma Gandhi, and he was really very much caught up with Mahatma Gandhi and his works, the Dalai Lama. He has walked this path for his entire life. Now, but as life would have it, in the early 1950s, or in 1950, in fact, China did invade Tibet and took control of the country. The Dalai Lama, being the head of state, negotiated with Chou Enlai and Mao Zedong, but that truce only lasted until really the end of the fight. Of 1959, and then it sort of, they were the revolt in Tibet, where they wanted autonomy, and the Chinese invaded, and this is when the Dalai Lama fled, and now he lives in exile in Dharamsala, in India. But he travels the world with his message of peace, ahimsa. He was awarded the Nobel Prize in 1986, I believe. But he has taken it upon himself to be a beacon of light and freedom. He has written some 110 books. He has planned out a new government for Tibet. Of course, it's not been accepted by China, but he wants it to be free and autonomous, democratic, with freedoms. He wants the Chinese people to stop sending Chinese people to Tibet. That's how they integrate or destroy a society, is by bringing in other people into the region, and therefore the character of Tibet is changed. The Dalai Lama is the reincarnation of Avalokiteshvara. Now, this idea is so profound that is out there in the public, this idea of reincarnation. Now, this definite kind of Purim Parapara chain that exists in Tibetan Buddhism dates back to the 300s, 400s, no, 1500s, the 1500s. It began in the 1300s, but I'm getting too many numbers stuck in the head. But the time of Tsongkhapa, when he reformed the Tibetan society and its religious order, and he expelled all the red caps, and those were simply the sorcerers. Now, what is interesting is that Buddhism has the strange characteristic that when it finds itself in a country, that it incorporates the rites and rituals of that country into Buddhism. And it did that in Tibet. The Bons, or Bones, I'm not sure exactly how it's pronounced, but they were into animism and nature worship. I don't know if you have ever had the pleasure of listening to Tibetan music, if you want to call it that. But it's this cacophony of sounds that they make. It's for a purpose, to drive away the evil spirits. Because the Bone religion was founded or based upon this animism. So you have strange customs and procedures. And in Buddhism, the three jewels of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha are embodied by the Dalai Lama. Now, his Sangha is the Tibetan community, but he has gone out into the world and he has made humanity his community. So he preaches the teachings of Buddha. Ironically, we just read from the Voice of the Silence. The Dalai Lama says, yes, he knows this book quite intimately because it was part of his studies. But also the Cheshire Lama. Now, who is this? Well, this is another bodhisattva whose incarnations are recognized from one generation to the next. And what has happened when the Chenchen Lama died, the Dalai Lama chose the next Chechen Lama. Unfortunately, the Chinese government intervened and stole this child and the family and took them away, and they've never been heard from again. But they put another in its place, because they wanted control of that office or that position. So this has presented a dilemma for the Dalai Lama. So what should this lineage end with him because of the political turmoil that exists in China now? And he has made a statement on this several times that there will only be another Dalai Lama is if the Chinese or the Tibetan people want it. But he laid out strict procedures for the recognition of this next Dalai Lama, the 15th. So he has laid the groundwork for that. He says, in fact, when he's 90 years old, he'll meet with all of the prominent lamas and leaders of Tibet and the different sects of Buddhism and come up with a procedure for the recognition of the 15th Dalai Lama. The sayings or the words of the Dalai Lama are echoed throughout Buddhism. And we like to impose, oh, well, this was said by the Dalai Lama, or this was said by Buddha. What we're seeing here is just a transmission of teachings, not to be put with one human being, but is a body of work that embraces all this knowledge. Theosophy. It is theosophy. So here are some quotes. I think we have out on the table are just a sampling of the attitude of mind that one must try to engender. And happiness is not something ready-made. It comes from your own actions. All right, so that we're responsible. If you can help, help others. If you cannot do that, at least do not harm them. If you want others to be happy, practice compassion. If you want to be happy, practice compassion. My religion is very simple. My religion is kindness. Remember that not getting what you want is sometimes a wonderful stroke of luck. The ultimate authority must always rest with the individual's own reason and critical analysis. We can live without religion and meditation, but we cannot survive without human affection. We can never find peace in the outer world until we find it within. Be kind whenever possible, because it's always possible. There's only two moments in life that you can change, that you cannot change. Only two moments that you cannot change. The past and the future. There is only now. And we hear that echoed over and over again in this philosophy and all philosophies associated with it, from the Gita to the ocean to all our devotional books. They always iterate that the only moment that exists is now. This is when the creative impulse can flourish, and it can only flourish then, in this moment. Now there's, because of the bone religion, there's many aspects of the Dalai Lama's religion that are interwoven with his animism. That's why we see these customs of the noises and the clankers and the drums and so forth. That is how they've adopted that into the whole Buddhist understanding. So that I'm going to stop because I'm really fumbling here for ideas, but it looks like we're having a comatose minute, so we better wake everybody up. It's only a few of us here, so we can speak freely. We're amongst friends. Yes.
Well, we know about the two different types of Buddhism, but is the, what you say, you call it the bone?
Bone, yeah, that's
like
it.
B-O-N-E?
B-O-N. Well, that's a religion in itself. It's a way of interacting with nature, and they use magic, and they're into the spirits. They're into they're very much aware of the subtle occult properties of nature, and that was the problem that existed when Tsongkhapa came on the scene, because they were steeped in this black magic that was surrounded this bone religion. So he chased all the red caps, those that were practicing this magic. He expelled them from the order. You follow?
Yeah. So it's not Buddhism at all.
bone?
Yeah.
Bone is bone.
Okay.
But it has been incorporated into the Buddhism, of Tibetan Buddhism.
More thought on that idea that there's only two moments that we can change. Think about that idea that we can't change the future. It seems to fly in the face of what we understand of karma. Isn't karma the doctrine of responsibility? And it's very much we make our futures by the choices we make today. So.
That's the point.
In that sense, we could change. We can change
yes.
the future. We
well,
can't change the past, but we can learn from it.
Well, I think it's if we look at it on a continuum, that how we're acting right now is really in a preparation for moments in the past. So the past and the present and the future are all present now. So we can't change the future because we've already created it. We're creating it now. We're creating our future. It's sort of linear in that sense. Now, we can change it all, but it has to be now. This is when it can only be changed, so then we can't change the future because we changed it now. We understand that it's sort of like a paradox, is that we're always changing, you know, and the future can always be changing before us, but once we have decided and done things in a certain way for a certain period of time, this continues. It doesn't just abruptly stop and something new starts. Yes.
Well, the future then is not fixed.
Correct.
So when we say that you can't change something, it might impress some people as being a fatalistic idea. We don't think that's
right. Right. Well, yeah. Well, this idea of fatalism is one that has to be very thought out and expressed, because that is what people jump to immediately. That it is fatalism.
We think we have to draw a line, because if it is firmly set because of our thinking and acting, we can't change that future. We can only change our attitude in receiving it. But the rest of it is still in formation.
Yes.
It's the three types of karma that Mr. Judge talks about.
Right.
So we can change by changing now.
Right.
But we may have to pay the full price on some things and just accept that.
That's how we're lucky. We get to pay the full price. All right? I mean, how better? I think all of us at this stage of our life we come to understand that we welcome this change, because that is the only thing that's going to enable us to change. And the Dalai Lama, the Buddha says, Mahatma Gandhi says, be the change you want to see in the world. Yes.
I think it's one of the aphorisms of karma, that says that the karmic results will follow for three lives unless certain causes of mitigation are set up, and one of them includes the power of the vow.
Wow. Yes.
Change or lessen or give a new direction to that.
Well, I think we as students know the power of the vow, even though we may not have thought about it very much. But we know we've been committed to many things. And a vow is something that reaches down to the very soul of your nature and brings it all out. Follow?
A different issue, maybe?
You're just full of questions today, aren't you?
Once.
Okay, well, we'll let you go one more time.
Okay. We were fascinated with that idea of the doctor. what you think is unlucky, what you think is unlucky may be a very good thing?
Yes.
Is that?
Yes.
So, isn't it interesting that we don't know too much about the previous Dalai Lamas? They're pretty much obscure to us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking we probably wouldn't know too much about this Dalai Lama. Like Hercules, he might still be sitting in some pasture or a little village in Tibet, teaching people. But because of the Chinese, it sort of forced him to move out into the world, and as a result, millions of more people are aware of Buddhism and its teachings through the contact with the West, which he may not have been able to do if he was not put in that situation. So we think his life is a very interesting example of that quote.
It is, and you look and see the hardships and difficulties, but the flower that it has brought forth is that he has touched the world with these ideas. And that's probably more important than anything. You know, the fact that he's a lineage of bodhisattvas, of compassion. It's an idea which many people find hard to grapple with, how to understand. Because if they're not accepting reincarnation, how could this possibly be? In the back.
And yet the Dalai Lama has said he has retired.
Yeah, he said that a couple times.
And Tsongkhapa, we could say the same thing. We wouldn't be here studying in public and having these ideas if it weren't for Tsongkhapa, who incarnated in order to tear down the superstition and illicit rites of the Bon.
Well,
so he came to Tibet to do that.
Yeah.
And it is said it was the Buddha himself in Tsongkhapa. So we owe Tsongkhapa everything that we have right now in the way of wisdom.
And it's really not personalities that we see. We see this upswelling of spiritual ideas, you know, all over the world. And it's interesting that Tibet, and it's because it's so remote and hostile compared to where we live now, that a whole culture has thrived and survived. And this idea of brotherly love or universal brotherhood still exists within a community. I've only really entertained one other religion that embraces theosophy, and that's the Sikhs. And they base their religion on universal brotherhood. And when I sat to talk with them, they were, it was all theosophical, but they have their own name for it. They have their own param guru and guru chain. And they have all that they pay respects to. Well, it's the same with the Dalai Lama. It's a whole lineage. But this whole is the mandala of the sitting Buddhas or Bodhisattvas that are our protection, that surround us. It's the same thing. You know, I mean, and what makes theosophy not Buddhism is that we see all of that. You know, Buddhism is a religion per se. Theosophy is a philosophy, a science, and a religion. So it's beyond, you know, it's not so compartmentalized. That's just a religion. Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, theosophy is not a religion. It is religion itself.
Very well spoken.
So, we were wondering about the Bon and their practices Would the voodoo practices be similar in many respects, because they deal with nature forces, elementals, and kind of black magic, really?
Well, we really couldn't say exactly the unique differences between them. From what we know of voodoo, it's the manipulation of your environment or the material plane with the use of the astral and your psychic energy. The bone religion is also, but you know, they use the elementals as a force. They're interrelated with them, so. They're both very dangerous, you know. Even being in the presence of a Dukpa has the ability to draw out of us certain qualities that sometimes we don't want to see. But we are told that the great teachers send the Dukpas out amongst us so that they can test us and see, and so that we can see for ourselves where we are.
So,
well,
we
you
follow
want
up?
Yeah, another one?
Oh, no,
that's two in a row.
Two in a row, that's called a follow up.
That's a double follow. Now you forgot your son, huh?
You derailed me.
That's right. That's right. We'll come back to you, okay? All right. In the very back.
This is a personal anecdote, but we're among friends, so we can share. Someone that I'm related to works at the University of Buffalo and was in charge of the Dalai Lama's visit to the campus.
No.
Wow. And was in his presence for quite a long time, moving him from one area in his entourage to another. And she described someone who seemed more like a druid than Bon, but also at the end of that visit, this very silly, very lighthearted, very childlike personality completely shifted when it was time for her to say goodbye to him. And he leaned forward and he said, "May I touch you?" And she said, "Yes," expecting a handshake. And instead, he put his palm of his hand on her forehead. And he said to her, "You are going to have quite an experience, and it's going to be okay. The science and the art will carry you through." And he touched her forehead again. And with that, they said goodbye. And she said, "Thank you." And it was less than a year later that she was diagnosed with a brain tumor, exactly in that position where he settled his palm and rubbed his palm on her forehead. And a surgery that should have lasted for hours, in her case, lasted about 45 minutes because this thing just kind of popped out on its own and it was easy to retrieve. There was no complications. So this very devout Catholic girl was left very perplexed in the presence of someone that she felt was far above most human beings, but she just didn't get the combination of the science and the philosophy, and she's still perplexed to this day.
Yeah, that's great. A wonderful story.
Well, in the Declaration, it welcomes all those who are in accord with its declared purpose and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. Well, when we hear these names in a foreign language and so forth, there's a library here where we can come in. And don't seem to need a book to understand it because it's musical in its meaning. And when you read such terms as mnemonicaia, et cetera, and we get used to understanding that the literature uses these names and these terms, but they require our study. And when we begin to study them, we have a language that fits the purpose better than our everyday language. And such names as the Buddha, mnemonicaia, and so forth, we get used to them. And one word will serve to define maybe 150 different ideas from a different point of view. So in a declaration, when we say by study, otherwise is application. And when we do that, we're on our way because we can meditate on these terms and get a far more realistic point of view of what our duties are.
Well, I think that we as human beings interact with each other every time that we meet. And we learn from it over and over again. Either we're the same old way, or we're going to be a little different today, but we're awake, and we're curious to know the truth, you know, and try to find something exciting in life today, this moment, where I feel alive, and not just pain. You know, to justify us being awake. You know, but we are awake. So, what do we do to make the best of it? Well, always be kind. It's as simple as that. But that means to yourself as well. Yes.
To read what Theosophy says about the pawn is in Great Theosophist. Look up the material on Tsongkhapa, and it gives a very good description of why that had to be tamped down in order for the teachings of the Buddha to take hold.
Yeah. We're very smart people as a humanity. We always try to find things to aid us, to help us. And I'm sure the bone and black magic is all tied up with that too, that we're trying to help, but then somehow what becomes involved? The personal eye. Then that's when we see a breakdown of our community.
But I think often groups like that, or beliefs like that, or teachings like that, are to help the ones who are presenting it. It's an ego thing and not a spiritual force. They entrap people and make them superstitious and ritualistic, and that's not the way to grow.
Well, it's sort of like what happens here too. But what, you know, you can sit back there all you want, but until you stand up here and read or behind the microphone, you don't fully understand how little you know. It's one thing that we understand something, but when someone asks a question and you try to explain it, that's far, far different. And the importance for us here to do that is out there, because we have to find some kind of dialogue to have with people, and it can't be always this teaching, you know, nah, 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 and they go, oh yeah, here he comes, you know. We don't want that. We want to be friends to everyone. Well, we want them to realize that, you know, that's their pain, their suffering comes from their own work and effort. But you tell somebody that, they're going to get in trouble again.
But it does not require platform work. It requires work.
Oh, well, stop.
No.
It requires platform work.
It's not fair, because a person can be in the audience and never say a word and have a greater influence than the speaker because of the study they did.
That's so true.
It is true.
But still, platform work is a must for all of us. No, that's you expressed your desires. We just expressed ours, and we shouldn't do that up here.
But it is not. It is not a requirement.
We changed that.
To at least talk about it to others.
No, there's no requirements. We're only being facetious. That we do what we think we can do, and we do the best that we can do, and that's all that we're asked to do. After our platform work. All right, here.
What did he mean when he said his religion is kindness? In terms, when we think of religion, we think of a whole system of worship, prayer, ritual, creed, devotion. And when we think of kindness, sometimes it's too abstract. What did he mean by it?
Well, it's interesting because, all religions, they sort of show us how to go in, and to study and to look and to learn and to understand. And he's saying, no, be out. Be outward expressing kindness. Just be kind. Thought, words, and deed. Be kind. And we know that sounds very simple, but it's really not. Because our ego, our small ego, the one that thinks he owns the world, doesn't like that. He wants to be in charge, and he wants to get all the accolades he can get. Until we train the dragon, that we are the rider. We're in charge. So, that's all you got to do.
But from what we've read of his works, what we've read that he wrote, I should say, the outward expression of kindness sounds like too much of a simplification. He believes very much in self-study, in meditation. And he certainly is a scholar of science and a scholar of Buddhism and other disciplines. So how does he label all of that under the name of kindness? It seems to involve much more than just an outward act of compassion.
Well, the expression of a religious belief, is it done in words? Is it done in feelings? It sort of embodies the whole compassionate idea. And study and all that are necessary, but it comes down to the heart doctrine. It's that complete and utter recognition that we are all one, that universal brotherhood is truly a fact of nature, and that otherwise we wouldn't be animated in these bodies. And we are animated, and we are standing behind this animation and guiding it, or sometimes just guiding us, but that's really truly what it is. We're the intelligence behind all of this, and we only think we're this is as intelligent as we are. is how we're functioning now. You know, and we are told we are so limited in our scope. We have no idea the potential that lies within us. You know, the whole universe lies within us as potential. But you know, how do we rise above this particular state into a more universal understanding? You know, does religion do that? In some ways it does. But in other ways it just binds you down so that you can't spread your wings.
Well, we're talking about the Dalai Lama. And again, in the declaration by study and otherwise, we recall when we were children, hearing the old folks use language, would say, what do you mean by that? She was talking to her, and she said, I see what you mean. And the little boy, well, you heard what you mean. I see what you mean. And there are many other instances that we remember where the reply didn't fit the situation the way the little boy thought it should. Now we understand. Die, lie, goes and comes. But if we study, and in the platform we hear these words, that we should constantly do our own study until we begin to say, oh, I see what that means. You didn't hear a word. So language is important. And that's why the library is important for us to attend for our own benefit, so that when we hear something in these rooms, what in the world does that mean? Ocean has a relationship. And once we begin to realize the method and the techniques used, we're on our way at least to an initial understanding of what the teachings mean.
I see what you mean. I see what you mean. That's going to follow you around for the rest of your life. Yes.
I think we heard once that the meaning of the word Dalai refers to the ocean.
Correct.
The ocean lies. And in a way, it reminds us of the ocean of theosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Theosophy on its surface, but not overwhelmed understanding of the child, and yet in its depths, it gives the greatest minds. And when we think of the contribution of the Dalai Lama around the world, he's really dealing with people mostly at that level, the shore. As children trying to get their feet wet, where the main point to understand and not to be overwhelmed with is the importance of kindness. But obviously, with the almost psychic abilities he demonstrated in the case brought forth, and his knowledge and his influence on the Tibetan community amongst, there's obviously an individual there with great depth, probably much more than most of us really can comprehend. And yet, he conceals it. He keeps that in there.
Yeah, humble.
Stays
humble.
Out of the limelight. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we think that the expression of how he's been a humble servant all along. He calls himself a simple monk. And that's what he is. He hasn't changed. That let me read a couple of other quotes here. Well, to conquer oneself is a greater victory than to conquer thousands in a battle. There's a saying in Tibetan, tragedy should be utilized as a source of strength. no matter what sort of difficulties, how painful experience is, if we lose our hope, that's our real disaster. The creatures that inhabit this earth, be they human beings or animals, are here to contribute, each in its own particular way, to the beauty and prosperity of the whole. That's our third fundamental. A spoon cannot taste of the food it carries. Likewise, a foolish man cannot understand the wise man's wisdom, even if he associates with a sage. In our struggle for freedom, truth is the only weapon we possess. No more. Yes.
In the Parliament of Religions in Chicago in 1993, the Dalai Lama was the final speaker, and it was in Grant Park at Chicago. It was outdoors, and it was a fenced-off area with chairs for all of us that were attendees to the conference. It's the saddest thing I think I've seen in many years. All the Tibetans were lined up outside the fence, desperate even to see the Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
And it was, I don't know, I'm a pushy person. So I went to one of the people at the gate and said, why don't we let them in? And they said, because the seats are for you people. And I said, then why don't we announce that we people should leave so that they could have our seats? And they didn't understand. But then they weren't Tibetans, were they?
No.
No. It was a wonderful speech, though.
Yes.
Well, every week we come into these rooms and we go back home. And then we come back again and repeat these actions. Hence, literally thousands given out right here in these rooms to help explain the moral issues, as well as the, shall we say, historical ones. The teachings brought to us by Madame Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, and so forth, specifically in this particular area of the United States alone, it's a great gift. Time we pick up a history book or read about the Declaration or anything about America, there's a strange similarity of terminology being used, which will open our eyes to the use of the term ocean of theosophy. And then we begin such terminology as your sins will be washed away. No longer has that effect on us intended. But here, freedom is offered to us.
Now we'll have to end with that resounding note. But we would like to remind you, as I'm sure you're all aware, that everything is sustained here through voluntary contributions. Just walk away. Go ahead. I'm talking. and now I forgot what I was saying. But if you want to contribute anything, you know where you can do it. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.